Opinions expressed in this program are for general information purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. It is only intended to provide education about the financial industry. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor prior to investing. Any past performance discussed during this program is no guarantee of future results. Any indices referenced for comparison are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. As always, please remember investing involves risk and possible loss of principal capital. Please seek advice from a licensed professional. Bulwark Capital Management is an investment advisor representative of Clear Creek Financial Management, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham on AM 770 KTTH. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Know Your Risk Radio is brought to you by Bulwark Capital Management, helping families navigate the ever-changing and often treacherous financial markets. Know Your Risk Radio starts now. Here's your host, Zach Abraham.
All right. Welcome back to the show. Thank you so much for joining us and joining us for what is unequivocally or undoubtedly the most scintillating hour of finance radio. Tongue firmly in cheek. Anyway, I have a great show planned for you today. Kind of came in, things opened up a little bit, Darren. We were supposed to have an interview. And we had to push it off. We're going to have it. We got some other great interviews lined up. We're still working on that. Not surprisingly, I don't know why it surprised me, but coordinating with a vice president of a Federal Reserve Bank, I mean, these guys are stupidly busy for the amount of things that they actually get done. And that's no knock. Again, he's probably going to listen to the show and be like, fine, I'm not coming on then. No knock, but man. They're flying all over the world. They got to have economic discussions. You know, these are important. These are serious people. So anyway, we're still working on that one. And then another one that we've got. And I just wanted to hear the other side of it. Right, want to present the other side of Tesla. So we got one of the biggest proponents, one of the biggest Tesla pushers out there. He's a young guy. I think he's 25, 26, but very articulate, smart guy. He's actually from Seattle. And just got him to agree to come on. We're going to have a little Tesla discussion. And we got Tobias Carlyle coming on in 2 weeks. And then talk to Luke Grohman. Going to have him on again to discuss the U.S. dollar. And we got it. The docket is full. We got some great stuff coming up. So excited about that. And also, we got a great show planned for you today. Several different things we want to go over. Of course, we're going to start with the market update. And then we're also going to talk about market timing. I love the whole market timing. You talk to retail investors, you say market timing. And I mean, it's like the golden rule of investing. I don't market time. I really want to go into that. We've discussed it before on the show, but really talk about what does that mean, right? And because I think there's so many misconceptions out there and we've got data to back it up. What if I told you that certain amounts of market timing, quote unquote, not really, and we're going to dig into this. I don't want to give it away. We're going to dig into it. But there are some forms of market timing people that have worked. So we're going to talk about that. Now, listen, don't take that sentence and run out and decide all of a sudden you're going to start trying to predict what the S&P is going to do on a day-to-day basis. That's not what we're talking about. But they're in, you know, they talk about a great lead, right? That's a good lead in. Isn't that what we refer to in the business, right? It's a lead in. So anyway, that's going to be a great conversation. It's something that we spent a ton of time researching. And I think it's really interesting. And then that's going to tie right into another discussion we're going to have about risk management. Because the two go together. And so we're going to delve in. Now, that may not sound exciting. Darren, if I say we're going to talk about risk management, there's no way you're turning the dial, right? I mean, you're all ears at that point.
I'm glued.
Yeah.
Because I have to be in here in the studio with you.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. See, you can't undercut the show, man. I mean, come on. Wow. You're slipping. You're a week in Europe, you come back, and now you're undercutting our content here. This guy. He is a millennial, right? So just I want to put that caveat out there. So we're going to talk about risk management. And then the other one, we got to talk about IPOs. There have been some, how should we say it, funny, humorous, interesting, but very profitable IPOs. We want to dig into that. IPO of the week. And I have a feeling that this is going to become more of a story just because I want to say that so far this year we've had the more IPOs at the beginning of this year than the beginning of any year since 2000. So, you know, that's not a very bubbly indicator, right? That doesn't indicate that a market's overheated. But anyway, so we're going to talk about IPOs. So let's get into the market update. And as we'll get into particulars in a second, but fascinating article out today on CNBC about Warren Buffett saying that there's no textbook. Here's the quote. There's no textbook that could have predicted the strange economy we have today. And Buffett highlights that unemployment rates remain so low, yet interest rates and inflation are not rising. At the same time, the U.S. government continues to spend more money than it takes in. That is the understatement of the week. What are we looking at? $1.2, $1.3 trillion deficits this year alone. But he also I don't want to get hung up on that. You know, I could spend an entire episode, probably a week, talking about too much government debt and too high deficits. Anyway. And then he says, no economics textbook I know that was written in the first couple of thousands of years that discussed even the possibility that you could have this sort of situation continue and have all variables stay more or less the same. You know, I'm going to save this article because I am. Darren, did you know this? I'm writing a book right now. Yeah, I got asked to write a book. And when they asked me to write the book, my first thought was, I think you've got the wrong guy. Right. You want me to write a book. Interesting process. I talk about things that you never thought you'd actually do, you know, write a book. First of all, who'd want to read it? you probably shouldn't be underplaying your own work like that. But no, but one of the things that we're going to talk about, and the reason this is so interesting to me, is we're going to talk about a lot of this stuff that Buffett's talking about. Because I actually think, now there's an element of hindsight in this. I will fully admit this. Because we are living in a new economic paradigm. And a lot of people don't want to hear that, especially Donald Trump fans. Probably a lot of people listening to this radio show, because they think that when you say that, or they think the markets are overvalued, or you talk about government debts, that you're taking a shot at Trump, and we're not. That's the other thing we want to encourage people to do is, listen, separate the way that you look at politics from the way that you look at finance. Because I can tell you this, economies and markets don't care, right? They're going to do what they're going to do. And I think way too often our political beliefs feed into our investment ideas and our investment philosophies. And like any other bias, we've got to make sure that that isn't clouding the issue. So anyway, getting to one of the themes of the book that we're going to be talking about is this economic anomaly that we currently have going on. But I don't actually think it's an anomaly. And if you're out there listening to this show today, I would encourage you, now it's going to sound odd coming from me, especially considering the radio show that we're on. And I want to assure you I'm not a whack job leftist. I'm quite the contrary. But I would encourage you to get on Netflix and watch a documentary called Requiem for an American Dream by Noam Chomsky. And, you know, finance makes strange bedfellows, right? I watch that just because I typically will read and watch people that I disagree with because, you know, as we talk about, it's the bullet you don't see. It's the punch you don't see that knocks you out. And I think all too often we get into echo chambers and just listen to, you know, people that think like us. So I like to get out there and listen to these things. And it was really interesting listening to Noam Chomsky discuss a lot of these changes, right? How have we had such rampant asset price and rises, asset price inflation, and yet median wages have been falling off a cliff, right? They have not. It's been the one part of the economy that hasn't kept up. The average, style of living, the average, you know, person's, you know, living standards. You know, you just think back 40, 50 years ago, you owned two cars in the house that you owned, right? You owned them both. You owned all three of them. One parent worked, the other one stayed home, right? That now is considered luxury, right? If you own both your cars and you own your home and only one spouse has to work, that's not a middle class standard by any stretch. A lot of people are probably listening in the car going, yeah, tell me something I don't know, pal. But anyway, it was funny listening to Chomsky because I agreed with 95-96% of what he was talking about and the problems that he was talking about and the lack of productivity growth and lack of wage growth and the wealth gap. And I agreed with him. And so I'm kind of watching it and just going, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm with you. And I'm waiting for him to go off the rails, right? I'm waiting for him to take his typical left-handed turn. And it came eventually. And he attributed it all to the abolishment or the curtailing or the getting rid of certain laws and practices that were beneficial to unions. Yet he never cited those laws. And he tied everything back to the early 70s. And I kept waiting for him to mention, look, if you look at, if we look at 1960 to 1980, there's a lot of things that went on, but unequivocally, the biggest economic change occurred in 1971 when Nixon closed the gold window. And I find that undebatable. I mean, you're talking about the standard currency of the world, right? The reserve currency of the world. And it goes full fiat in 1971. It goes off. It no longer is backed by gold. Nixon closes the gold window. And Chomsky never even addresses it. And here's why I think it's key. And this is going to be one of the things we discuss in the book, is that central banks have really brought philosophy into economics, right? Meaning that a lot of this stuff you can't model, like Buffett's talking about here, you can't model it. Nobody could show an economy responding this way or behaving this way for an extended period of time under these conditions, because this whole philosophic element came into play. And what we mean by that is prior to 1971, look, it wasn't an immediate overnight change. These things happened gradually, but new capital was created based off productivity, meaning that if we had a widget or something that we made as a manufacturer for $15 and we retailed it for $12, and then there was a technological breakthrough that let us make that same good for, let's say, $7, right? That's productivity growth. Where that process was creating $2 a profit or $3 a profit previously, now it's creating, you know, $8 a profit. That's productivity growth. That's new capital growth. And that new profit can you know, merge and work its way around the rest of the economy and fund new things and invest in new technologies that do the same thing in other businesses, right? And create increased productivity. That was essentially how new capital was created. But post-1971, that's not how it worked anymore. Now, if you wanted to be rich and you wanted to prosper, proximity to the printing press was now an easier way to get money, right? Government contracts. Because now capital is no longer finite. It's infinite. It's printed off political whim or political strategy. And what you would expect if you took, you know, if you went back to a 30,000 foot view and looked at that scenario, And you said, okay, what are the knock-on effects of this going to be if we go full fiat? What I would expect is that proximity to the printing press, i.e. lobbyists, right? You know, getting politicians in your pocket through campaign donations or fundraisers or whatever. I would expect that to be a more profitable endeavor than just sitting back and making your widgets as it was before, right? Well, what have we seen since then? Now, we're condensing a lot down here, but what have we seen since then? You've seen a new robber baron age. And this goes back to our interview that we had with Jonathan Tepper, the myth of capitalism, right? How so many of these industries have been consolidated, where we used to have 9 to 12 players. Now we've got two or three. You've got duopolies or oligopolies or, you know, or just straight monopolies. And that decreases competition for labor, therefore wages would drop or would not rise commensurate with inflation. Right? All these things make sense. And Chomsky just completely left that out of the documentary. And nobody ever really talks about it. But I think the only lens, and I'm sure Buffett knows this. But again, why doesn't he come out and you know, again, why doesn't he come out and attribute this to the Fed? And attribute it to irresponsible central bankers and attribute it to Nixon going off the gold standard? Well, because he's playing the proximity game, too. He doesn't want to swim upstream. And I think that everybody's looking past that. And nobody's really stepping back going, wait a second, well, what's really gone on here? And everybody's like, oh, we got to get rid of the lobbyists. We got to do all that. Well, you know, one of the easiest ways you could do that would be to go back on to an actually backed currency. The other thing I think is hilarious is I was reading a Fed paper the other day, and they were saying that one of the most disturbing things of our time, or one of the real problems we've got economically, is that we can't stimulate enough inflation. And I just, my jaw dropped when I read that. The biggest problem we face economically is things aren't expensive enough. What world do you live in? I just wonder if these guys have been to a grocery store or shop for a car. Incredible. These people are just, wow. It's academia at its best, right? So anyway, we're gonna discuss that in the book, but I think that's something really important to take a look at. And you know, you can trace it all the way back to the creation of the modern Federal Reserve. You know, the U.S. dollar, right? The Euro dollar system that was put in place after Bretton Woods, and where that happened. And you know, read the story of the monster from Jekyll Island. And you know, there's a lot of stuff out there about it, but most people are blind to this, and we've got to adjust ourselves to the fact that where we are today, with central banks essentially sterilizing their own deficits by buying their own debt, is that we've gone full fiat, right? All the cuffs are off. It's a free-for-all for central banks. We want to see better economic numbers. Just, hey, you know what? Look at what China did in December of last year. We're just going to originate $1 trillion worth of debt out of fresh air or thin air, and we're going to pump it right into the economy. And it's going to be awesome. And, you know, I hear a lot of guys like raging against this now, but I look at them and I go, guys, once we went off the gold standard, this was an eventuality. It was inevitable. It was going to happen. And that's where we are. And look, we got to adjust. I read a great quote from Bezos the other day where he said, you know, when you look at, and I'm paraphrasing here, but when you look at the world, you've got to accept it as it is. And it does you no good to walk around griping about how it should be. And nowhere is that more true in investing. We got to accept it like it is. We got to play it like we see it. We got to play the game in front of us. We can't just gripe about it. We had Chase Taylor on, head of Pinecone Macro Research a few weeks back, maybe it was a month back, and he coined the term financial justice warrior, these guys that are constantly griping about central banks. And you might sit there and go, Zach, half the time I hear your radio show, you're railing against central banks. I am. Because of a lot of stuff that Buffett's talked about. I mean, you could not design policy that was more beneficial to the upper class or the rich people in a society, and that would also simultaneously leave the working Joe behind. I mean, that's what they've done. And if you don't think I'm right, or if you think I'm being hyperbolic when I say that, just look at the financial crisis. We spent $1 trillion bailing out the banks, right? Then we drop interest rates to zero and tighten lending standards at the same time. So what you effectively do, and I've said this on the show before, but what you effectively do is you're boxing out the average investor, right? You drop interest rates to zero, but the only people that can access capital at that rate are people that are already rich, that have a balance sheet that can justify that level of borrowing. And so those guys go in there and they drive up the asset prices. And by the time the banks get comfortable to lend that cheap money to the average Joe, asset prices have already gone up by 40 or 50%. They missed out. You see it. Once you start looking for it and you dig into it, you'll see it all over the place. And I just thought that was a fascinating take by Buffett. So now, okay, so let's get off that diatribe, get into the market update. Where are we at? Got pretty good unemployment numbers that came out today. Lowest unemployment number posted since 1969. Again, the one caveat we're going to throw into that is the unemployment numbers do not mean what they used to mean based on the way that they calculate them today. Is unemployment low? Yes. Is it as low as the number would suggest? No, because of the way the numbers are calculated. What I mean by that is every 2 years, if somebody's considered unemployed, they fall out of the calculation 2 years into it. So it's almost as if the number would reflect. Let's roll this way. Let's say you had a Great Depressionary event now and you got up to 20%. I think we had 23, 24% unemployment in the Great Depression. But let's say you had 20%, we'll use a round number. And if nothing changed in your economy based on the way they calculate unemployment today, over a long enough timeline, if no jobs were added, the unemployment number would eventually come back down to 5 or 4%. even if those people never enter the workforce again. Because every 2 years, if somebody goes unemployed, after 2 years, they're no longer counted, right? So keep that in mind. Is the economy doing well? Yes, it is still cranking along. It is certainly still the cleanest dirty shirt. Again, I don't think that those numbers, you know, if we just look at manufacturing numbers and if we look at the productivity of debt, which has reached another all-time low, I think the marginal productivity of debt in the United States now is like 32 cents for every dollar of debt issued. So you get a 32 cents pop of productivity after each additional dollar of debt. And, you know, as early as, I want to say 20 years ago, that number was like 1.2 or $1.20 or something like that. And it's no secret. We've talked about this. We were just talking about it. Productivity is still at record lows. And, it's going to be fascinating to see this play out. And now, like we talked about, we were very bared up at the end of last year. Then the Chinese stimulus came on and we've seen asset prices recovering. They're still ridiculously priced because there is margin pressure. Stalwarts like Google and Amazon have missed numbers. Their stock continues to go up. Google got hit a little bit. Amazon, apparently, if Amazon has the slowest revenue growth pace of the last 8 or 9 years, that's a buy signal, apparently, in this market. A lot of rates still have not bought into this. That's the one thing that's kind of confusing to us. You see a rip like this in markets, we should see rates on the 10-year and the 20-year and the 30-year going down. Or excuse me, rates should be going up. They're not. I mean, I think we bottomed out at 2.35, 2.37 at the depths of December. The 10-year is yielding 2.53 today, so that's very slight movement. So bonds still aren't buying it. A lot of concerns out there. I think the biggest concern we see is overconfidence. And I've been saying this for the last 2.5 months. I've never seen retail investors more excited. No knock against retail investors at all. They're our clients. Love you guys. But it's not a great sign. It's definitely something that we want to, you know, try to temper. And again, this goes back to our, you know, opening statement, if you will, about making sure that we don't let political ideals and excitement and emotions playing into our investing. We got to be disciplined. We got to be shrewd. We got to keep our nose to the ground. It does not pay. Nobody ever said to me, look, over exuberance was my key to generating wealth. Never heard it. Never will. Risk management continues to be the game. So other things, gold is still stuck in this sideways cycle. Very strange, very low volatility. Seems to have a floor at 1270, a ceiling at 1350. So we're still in that range. Can't get too excited about gold until it breaks 1350, 1380, somewhere in that department. And otherwise, it's still trading in that range it's been in for the last, 4 years, something like that. Now, the flip side is we are seeing inflation picking up. And that's going to be something to keep an eye on. Hearing it also on a lot of conference calls, a lot of reports talking about increased input costs. And I would expect that to start playing a role. You can't just keep running assets this high and keep, you know, doing what you're doing and not start to have some real, you know, acceleration on the inflation side. So that's definitely something to keep going. But look, we said it all along. The last 3 or 4 months. You know what? Actually, the last 17 months are proof of the need for risk management, right? You can't panic and leave because you don't know where asset prices are going, but you got to make sure that you've got a portfolio that's correctly balanced and that has the right amount of risk management that's going to work in any environment. And you go, well, Zach, I've got that. It's stocks and bonds. Look, if you think that's going to cut it for you, you haven't been paying attention. Your bonds are still paying you less the inflation rate, especially when you net out fees. They're basically at net zero for the last 5 years. Now, there are some exceptions. And you're like, well, Zach, I've got this bond fund that's paying me 5.3% a year. Well, yeah, it's junk debt. It's high-yield debt. And when markets drop, high-yield debt has got essentially, a little bit less, but basically has equity volatility built into it. Okay, so you're basically taking the risk of owning stocks and you're making a fraction of the return. And I'm hard pressed to find something that looks more ridiculous right now than the junk debt market. It is massively overpriced. No one's paying attention to balance sheets. At some point, it's going to be a big blow up. I think we're much closer than not. But, you know, the spreads, we haven't seen spreads blow out yet on high yields. So until that happens, you know, I guess you can keep getting it. My whole point is, though, still, if you're taking all that risk, you're getting a 5% return. It's a horrible risk-reward setup. Horrible risk-reward. Because high yield's going to get hit by one or the other. An economic downturn, which we're inherently closer to than we were a year ago, right? Just the way it's time, just the way numbers work. And then rising interest rates. Right, one of those two has to happen at some point. And when it does, high yield's going to get smoked. And those people that are getting 5% right now, they're going to feel like fools that they just lost 40% chasing 5. All right, we call that picking up nickels in front of a steamroller. So just that need for risk management. And if you don't have that, if you don't have a portfolio where you can sit back and go, you know what, if the market drops 40 or 50%, I'm going to be fine. I may even make money. But if the market continues to go up, I'm going to capture 70-80% of that upside. I'll be great. If you don't have a portfolio that you can't say that you can say that about, you need to give us a call. And you might sit there and go, that sounds too good to be true. It's not. It's just not. We wouldn't be on the radio this long if it was too good to be true. If we were selling snake oil. The other thing is Dory Monson wouldn't be a client of ours and endorse the firm. So if you don't have that level of confidence in your portfolio, give us a call. 866-779-RISK and 866-779-RISK. You can go to our radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. You can go to our website, Bulwark Capital Management. You can request the free booklet. You can request for a meeting. And if you don't want to talk to anybody, you can just send us an email. Say, hey, I want a portfolio review over email, or I want to go back and forth with Zach or one of your other reps over the email and figure out how you guys do it. And look, it's really simple, guys. It's not a complex sales strategy. We just show you our portfolios, show you what they cost, show you what the performance has been like, compare it to what you've got, and just boom, there you go. We're typically lowering clients' fees between 40 to 50%, increasing upside by somewhere between 25 to 40%, and blowing the doors off a traditional stock bond portfolio using our bond replacement strategy that's insured against loss. So we're lowering cost, increasing upside, and drastically reducing your risk. It's the biggest no-brainer of the world. Probably that's kind of a weird way to say it. Biggest no-brainer of all time, especially financially speaking. So anyway, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. You guys know the rest of it. Got a great show coming up. Stick with us. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
This is Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham. Listen to Zach discuss key investment strategies across several asset classes, not just stocks and bonds. Get your free copy of Zach's new booklet, Common Sense Investing. Go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Volatile markets are never fun, but it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Like Warren Buffett always says, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without their trunks on. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Chances are the defense portion of your portfolio, the bonds, got hit right along with your stocks. So what do you do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Bulwark Capital Management is a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
All right, welcome back. Thank you for sticking with us. And want to get into our market timing discussion. But before that, a couple things did catch my eye. Tesla, right? We've talked about Tesla a lot. Told you we're going to have a Tesla bull on to have this, you know, just hear the other side of the story. Do a little Paul Harvey, you know, the rest of the story. But we've had a heck of a bounce back here. Tesla bottomed, I want to say, like 226, 230 a share, something like that. today. It's went up 4% yesterday, up another 4% today. And this is on the back of Elon Musk announcing a $2.7 billion equity and debt money raise. You know, if they go through with this raise, we'll have to take another look at things, because what that will tell me, one of the reasons I didn't think that they were going to raise money, they've needed capital for a really long time, despite what Musk thought. You know, I think he'd have been much better doing this raise at $350 a share, but he didn't need it back then, apparently. I don't know if he can't read a cash flow statement or what, but if they successfully pull off a raise, you know, that would make me dampen, or that would dampen some of my opinions I've expressed on here before about saying that there could be fraud. I thought one of the reasons he wasn't doing a raise was because he didn't want to have to open his books. He's definitely going to have to open his books to do this raise, I would think. So that's going to be something to keep an eye on. But it really doesn't answer the demand problem they've got. They're just coming in way shy of their own expectations. And remember, that's the whole story. That's what it's all built on. The other thing is they've got some serious quality control issues that continue to get bigger over time. There was a group out of China, actually. There's a group out of China that was a taxi company that bought only Teslas. And they're all ticked, lobbying the Chinese government, as a matter of fact, because they said that 20% of the cars they get from Tesla have got problems. They're defective. 20%. And I don't know if you're familiar with manufacturing, but 20% ain't exactly a good miss rate. So that'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye on. But anyway, let's get back into market timing. So there is so much out there about market timing. If you bring the word up, most people look at you, especially astute retail investors, people that have done more of their homework. It's like, oh, you can't time markets. That's ridiculous. And that's true. If you're sitting down trying to predict which way you think market's going, like a day trader and all that kind of stuff, you're probably going to be wrong more often than you're right. And you're probably not going to do that well. But a lot of things get grouped into market timing, and I don't think it's fair. There are ways that we can limit risk and adapt to the market conditions around us that are not market timing. And the simple way we can illustrate that is, what do they tell you? The reason you shouldn't market time is because you won't make as much money. But what if I told you, sounds like the start of an ESPN episode, right? 30 for 30. What if I told you, what if I told you that there is a quote unquote market timing research company out there that has had a portfolio that has run since 1987, and that portfolio has averaged 13.5 or 13.7% a year during the same period of time in which the S&P has averaged about 10.5 to 11. And if you don't understand, maybe that doesn't sound like a big deal, but 3.5% annualized, even 3% annualized, over a 10-year period of time, that makes almost a 50% difference. Now, since 1987, going back that far, this portfolio has actually doubled S&P returns and has done it with lower volatility. Tell me, oh, that's not possible, Zach. Yes, it is. It's called Ned Davis Research. Okay? And they have a set of economic rules that they're not timing markets, but when certain economic and market indicators reach certain levels, this portfolio, based on an algorithm, reduces exposure to stocks and increases exposure to U.S. government bonds, essentially. And the same is said of you know, when things are doing well or when things recover. As those economic indicators get better, they increase exposure to stocks. And I think that main Ned Davis portfolio lost 17% in 08-09. And from top to bottom, the S&P dropped 63%. And like I said, guys, this is going back to 1987. So if you just bought the S&P 500 in 1987 or went in Ned Davis's research in 1987, Ned Davis would have doubled your money, or you'd have twice as much money if you'd have gone in the Ned Davis portfolio as opposed to just buying the S&P and holding it. So that kind of blows the whole market timing thing out of the water, right? But here's the difference. they're not quote unquote market timing. They are managing risk. And this is what we wanted to get down to. In the next segment, we're going to talk about how we manage risk. Risk management does not mean lower returns. If done properly, it means better returns. Now, what that does mean, though, is that if you're sticking with a consistent risk management approach, there will be times where you don't make as much money in a risk managed portfolio. But those times will be counterbalanced with times where you lose far less than you would in a non-risk managed portfolio. And these are real numbers, guys. Just pull up Ned Davis research on the internet. And you can't get, if you want to go like, oh, I want to invest in Ned Davis, you can't do that. Can't invest with them directly. They only work through investment firms like ours. So we can access Ned Davis research, and we have. So if that's something you're interested in, again, give us a call. But it's just, we need to have an understanding of what market timing is. And so when people say you can't time markets, that is true. You can manage risk. And I wouldn't encourage you to do it because you don't know what things to look for. But if we have an economic set of indicators that we're watching, and we're reading market internals, it's the same reason that, and we use a portfolio, we've got access to Ned Davis, but we use a portfolio that is very similar based on the same philosophy. And it does the same thing. In November 1st of last year, that portfolio pivoted from being 80% stocks to ratcheting down to where it only had 35% stock exposure. On February 1st, the portfolio pivoted back to 80% stocks. So it outperformed the market by a little bit during that period of time, not a lot, but it made more than if you'd have just owned the ETF for the S&P 500. But the key is that it had a fraction of the volatility. And why is that important? Well, for a variety of different reasons, it's important. One, if our asset values are staying more stable, it allows us to take advantage of market drops as opposed to just taking the hit like everybody else. And what I mean by that is if we have a 20% pullback, like we did at the end of last year, and we're only down 8% or 7% or 9% like we were, you could take that opportunity to buy a couple stocks or put some more money in some funds. Buy low, right? Which we did. And that even increases the performance even more. So we got to make sure that we're delineating and properly defining market timing versus risk management. And here's the deal. You're probably sitting there thinking this whole Ned Davis thing I'm talking about, that can't be right. A market timing algorithm, and remember, risk management, everybody's going to call it market timing, but guys, the returns are audited. I mean, they are what they are. And this is a big, well-known firm. And you're probably sitting there going, why haven't I heard this? Why has anybody told me about this? That sounds too good. Because remember, this is a business. JP Morgan and Morgan Stanley and all these other, they're not in the business of selling Ned Davis. They're in the business of selling their own stuff. And remember, their primary clients are the companies whose stocks and bonds they're selling to you. Isn't it funny how they always just say, no, stocks and bonds, you got to stay in there. You got to stay fully invested all the time. Well, of course. That's the business. I don't want to get off on a fiduciary rant here, but that's why you should be working with a fiduciary as opposed to an agent of a big bank, which is what 95% of these financial advisors out there. And look, these guys, they don't mean anything bad by it. The vast majority of these financial advisors are great people that have great intentions. But look, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Don't tell me what your intentions are. What have you done? And there's just so frustrating to me, even in my own family. I told you the story of my mother-in-law. God bless her, sweetest lady in the world. And I mean that, by the way. I mean, I would probably say that because I'm on the air. I'd probably say that regardless of whether I meant it or not. You don't want to start an on-air issue with your mother-in-law. I don't think that would be very good for holidays and things like that. But no, she's a sweetheart. But anyway, I went through this with her portfolio. I've seen it with families. You look at their portfolios and how these things have performed over time, and it's pathetic. As a matter of fact, the portfolio she was in, they told her, oh, you're going to average somewhere between 7 to 8% a year. She averaged 5.01% over an 11-year period of time. And if you guys have listened to the show before, you should know why. Bonds. Right? We got all these people loaded up in bonds as a safe part of their portfolio. And everybody's saying, oh, well, these things have averaged 6% as an asset class over the last 40 years. Well, yeah, but we weren't in a 0% interest rate environment. It's not possible going forward. Well, yeah, Zach, but you're not going to make that much off bonds, but bonds go up when stocks go down. No, they don't. That's true 30% of the time over the last 150 years. And we've talked about this on the show before, right? There's so many of these misnomers in finance. But anyway, what we want to keep in mind is risk management is an essential part of a portfolio. It's what a portfolio should be based on. And risk management is not market timing. Now, to a degree, it is, right? They're in the same neighborhood, but they're not at the same address. Some guy just sitting there thinking, I think now's a good time to buy the market. Well, what are you basing that on, right? You might as well go down and bet on the ponies. But if you've got a hard set of economic rules and that you're following on a rule-based manner with discipline over time, I mean, the results are what they are. Like I said, you know, everybody's like, oh, if you just held the S&P since 1987, well, that's true. You did pretty good. If you went with Ned Davis Research in a risk management model like they use, you doubled S&P returns over the last 20 years. Doubled them. And I don't know about you, but would you rather have twice as much money with half the volatility over the same period of time? Who wouldn't? So anyway, and we'll get into our risk management strategy next. But if this is the kind of thing that you're looking for, and listen, you should be. The reason we talk about this, the reason we build portfolios as a fiduciary, our only incentive, our financial incentive is to give you the best performance. That's it. There are better mousetraps out there. There are better ways to do things, and we've got the data and the historical return information to back it up. Like I said, you know, we're not always going to be right, but we're not going to get up here and talk about things we don't know about. And I'm not going to give you snake oil. And if you want to know about Ned Davis Research, if you want to know about what we use that's kind of we consider our equivalent of Ned Davis Research to manage that risk, like I was telling you, that portfolio that tilted to 35% stocks on November 1st and then went back to 80% stocks on February 1st. If you want to know about that, give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. You can go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. You can go to Bulwark Capital Management's website. You can read the 17-page paper written by Roger Ibbotson on there. We're actually working on getting Ibbotson on the show, too. That would be a huge get. Fascinating guy. I got a chance to meet him and talk to him in New York. Great guy and just brilliant. He's probably forgotten more about financial markets than any of us know. But yeah, you can go to Bulwark's website. And like I said, you know, if you don't want to call us directly, if that seems like too big of a commitment, you can just email. And we'll go back and forth with you on email. We'll send you the data. Here you go. Look, here it is. You don't have to take my word for it. And this data is audited by the S&P, audited by Morningstar. It's real. And like I said, just Google Ned Davis. I mean, you'll see it. It's no secret. Why haven't you heard about it before? Because your financial advisor doesn't work for Ned Davis. He works for the bank. Anyway, all right, we got to run, take a quick break. We'll be right back, and we're going to get into our risk management strategies and how we can lower volatility, lower fees, and increase returns. Stick with us. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
What does outside-the-box investing really look like? Schedule your free risk review with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management, and see a side-by-side comparison of your current portfolio versus one Zach would recommend. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com.
I have to tell you, what a relief for my wife and me when we got signed up for long-term care coverage. The more I learned about the fact that nearly 3 out of 4 of us will need some form of long-term care in our retirement, there are so many issues at play. For some people, they can't afford it and they become a burden on their friends and family. For others, you do have money set aside, but it wipes out everything that you've saved. And maybe most importantly, it's about having a plan so that all your children have to do is carry out your wishes. It's not a burden on them. And that's why I love the advice we got from Brian Ott and 525 Advisors. We started by going to one of Brian's free classes, and that's what I recommend you do to find out about all the different plans they offer. Brian does have a few classes coming up this month. Seats are limited, so sign up now at 525longtermcare.com. You'll get a free copy of Brian's book, too. Go to 525longtermcare.com, 525longtermcare.com.
Volatile markets are never fun, but it provides the opportunity to see exactly how much risk you're exposed to. Like Warren Buffett always says, when the tide goes out, you find out who's been swimming without their trunks on. Hey, it's Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital and host of Know Your Risk Radio. Chances are the defense portion of your portfolio, the bonds, got hit right along with your stocks. So what do you do? Look, safety doesn't have to mean lower returns. By using our bond replacement strategy, our clients have actually increased their returns while being insured against loss and all the while lowering their fees. Call now and get your free copy of our brand new booklet, Common Sense Investing, and learn how to protect your retirement against loss but still participate in market gains. Call 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Or go to knowyourriskradio.com.
Bulwark Capital Management's a DBA of Clear Creek Financial Management, registered investment advisor.
You're listening to Know Your Risk Radio with Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.
And we are back. Thank you so much for sticking with us. All right, we're going to tie it up as Darren's laughing. We went a little over. Shocker. Some things never change. You've gone to Europe. You thought you were going to come back and I'd have this all. Yeah. It doesn't happen. Hey, you know, remember that all I was saying about intentions, right? Best in, you know, road to hell. That's my, I get pumped though. You get talking about this stuff. I think one of the reasons I get excited, honestly, is there's just so much nonsense out there. And so much of it is marketing. And I meet with so many of you guys, and a lot of you are very disciplined, and you believe that these things are hard, fast rules. And I admire it because you're being disciplined in your approach. I get it, but it's just the financial industry has done such a bad job of educating. Or you know what? Maybe they've done a good job, right? Because their businesses have flourished. But there's so many better ways to do things out there. And here's the other thing I'll tell you for sure. You want the best piece of financial advice you've ever had? If you are one of those people that's hearing what I say and you go, you know what, Zach, that's, you know, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. But I haven't done that. That's not what I believe, and I'm sticking to it. If that's the way you believe, then I get it. I understand. And anytime you do things differently, you're going to be met with a certain level of skepticism. I'm used to it. But if you want to invest like that, for God's sake, don't pay somebody 1% a year to hold your hand while there's no portfolio adjustments made. They're not even managing it. You can get the same thing for $99 a year on E-Trade. It's nonsense. You look at the construct of the modern financial advising community, and it's just a bunch of rent seekers. Park your assets here. We'll call you once a quarter, give you an update. We're not going to do anything. We're not going to actually manage your money, but we're going to suck 1.2% out of your account per year. You know, run that number out at a compounded basis for 25 years. If that's the approach your financial advisor is taking, you don't need a financial advisor. The whole point of a financial advisor is to do better than you otherwise would. I mean, that's right. Anyway. So let's get into our risk management process. How do we do that? Well, if you've listened to Dory Monson's show, you've heard him talk about our bond replacement. If you've heard our show, you've heard us talk about it. And I can't pound the table enough. And it's just based on the returns. What if I told you, again, another what if I told you, what if I told you that you could buy or you could invest in a portfolio that had no management fees, was insured against loss, and solidly, by almost 2% a year, has outperformed the standard 60-40 stock bond portfolio. What would you think? Too good to be true? Well, it's not. Now, do I think this one portfolio or this one product should replace your entire portfolio? No. Because that's not where the most value is delivered. But as a bond replacement strategy, it's phenomenal. Why do we own bonds? I don't think anybody invests in bonds because they think bonds are going to get them rich. Right? It's for supposed to be for better returns than we can get sitting in cash at a bank, which is no longer true. There's five-year CDs out there paying 3%. You know, go find it. Go find a very safe, steady bond portfolio that net of fees is going to give you 3% without any interest rate risk. Good luck. Doesn't exist. So that purpose from owning bonds has gone out the window. But the primary reason we own bonds is security. Well, we've just seen a 10-year period of time where to start off the 10 years, stocks and bonds both dropped more than 20% for the first time since the Great Depression. And since then, they've been moving in lockstep. So not a lot of great security. Look at the end of last year. We said this 100 times. End of last year, bonds were dropping right alongside stocks. All right, so that reason for owning bonds is blown out the window. Oh, but the last one. Well, Zach, you're forgetting the fact that bonds are a hedge against equity risk. Right? When stocks go down, bonds go up. Oh, really? Well, that's what it's worked like for the last 40 years, if you take out the last 10. But like I said, we did research. This is actually going to be in the book that we're writing. Or I'm writing. It's kind of weird to say that. We looked into the numbers. That inverse correlation where stocks, when bonds go up in value and stocks go down, it's been true 30% of the time over the last 150 years. Again, your advisor's not going to tell you this. He might tell you I'm wrong. I'm just citing data. Look, if you don't like what I'm saying, take it up with the numbers. I'm just the messenger. So what have we just done? We've just blown up every reason to own bonds inside of a portfolio. Not to mention you're paying somebody 1.2% a year to own these dogs, and they're killing your performance. They're going to bleed money out of your account. They're going to lose money as interest rates rise. And oh, by the way, if interest rates don't go up, everybody always looks at me like, well, Zach, what if you're wrong? What if rates don't go up? And I look at them and I go, then congratulations, you're still making less than the inflation rate. You're still making on average a point to a point and a half less than you can make in a CD with zero risk. If you went out and sold a bond portfolio on its merits today, nobody would buy it. It's just, but yet we've got 30 to 40% of our assets in it. 30 to 40% of our nest egg sitting in bonds. So what's our alternative? Well, let's go back through the reasons of why we buy bonds. Security. Our bond alternative is insured against loss. So nobody would argue. That's safer than bonds. Bonds can lose. They have. They did last year. They did in 2016, I believe, in general. They got hammered in 2008. So it wins. Okay? So it wins that competition. What about returns? Well, what do we expect to make on our bond portfolio? Let's give bonds the benefit of the doubt. They've returned horrific over the last 5 years, but let's say they average 2.5% net of fees. And if they do that, I think you're going to be extraordinarily lucky. What about our bond alternative strategy? Been somewhere between 5.5 to 7% over the last 40 years. So beats it. And then what about the rising interest rate issue? As interest rates rise, bonds go down in value. Well, the only way rates can keep rising, for the most part, is if asset prices continue to go up. Our bond replacement, rather than being linked to interest rates, is linked to the stock market. So as the market goes up, it goes up in value. When the stock market drops, it stays level. So, and by the way, there are no fees. And I mean that. No hidden fees, no fees whatsoever. We'll pull it open and let you dig through the white paper. We'll show you. There's no fees. So if you take your 40% that's currently sitting in bonds and you plug into our bond replacement strategy, you're going to take your account fees down by 40%. You're going to increase returns on average by somewhere to, 2.5 to 4% a year, depending on market conditions. And your portfolio is going to be safer because that portion of the portfolio is insured against loss. If the insurance company that issues that portfolio, that product that we use as a bond replacement, if the insurance company, because it is an insurance product, it's called a fixed indexed annuity. I love saying the word annuity because people just recoil, right? It's the dirtiest word in investing. But it's, we've talked about it on the show a million times. It's not your grandfather's annuity at all. There's no guaranteed income component to it. It's very simple. It's just an accumulation vehicle. Insurance company makes a deal. They go, look, market goes up. We're going to give you 50 to 60% of the upside, depending on the index that we're indexed to and depending on the company. In exchange, market goes down. They insure us against loss. Meanwhile, we got no account fees. And you own the money. If you die, the money goes to you. It gets treated just like an IRA account. Think of it. The best way to conceptualize it is think of it as a balanced mutual fund that's insured against loss that doesn't have a fee. Okay? So we inject that into your portfolio. And one of the number one reasons when we meet with clients, most of them become clients of ours, but when we meet with clients, if they don't go with our portfolio, it's because they leave with this concept for some reason. It drives me crazy. But they leave with this concept in their head that to go with us is probably the more conservative, wiser route, but they don't want to give up on the money that their portfolio is making them. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but I'm pounding the desk. You don't give up on upside. Our portfolio gives you more upside. As a matter of fact, our 50-50 fixed indexed annuity, no fee fixed indexed annuity with no performance cap. Look, don't take this advice and go out and buy a fixed indexed annuity. Annuities have a bad name for mostly just reasons. Most of them are not good. There are, however, phenomenal products out there. Like I said, that have averaged 5.5 to 7% a year with zero risk and zero account fees. That exists. It's real. But don't take that information and just run out there and buy a fixed index annuity because there's a lot of garbage. Sounds great. Clients invest it for a year. It doesn't do anything close to what the advisor told them. And usually the reason for it is because the advisor doesn't understand it either. And they start tacking on these guaranteed income riders, these enhanced death benefits that just add fees and add a performance cap. So they'll tell you they'll give you 50% upside of the S&P 500, but they're going to limit your gains to 6%. Well, if the max you can make is 6% in a given year and you're paying 1.2% a year in annual account fees, what's the best year you can have? It's 4.8. That's not going to feel very good in a year like 2013 when the market's up 31. But we had products that year that were up better than 15% in a single year. Again, with no account fees being insured against loss. And then we add into it over here on the stock side of the portfolio, our take on that whole Ned Davis research, that risk management model that we use. And that portfolio, like I said, at the end of last year, it pivoted to 35% stock. So it was way less exposed to risk. At the end of the year, on November 1st, market dropped 18% from that day to the 18 or 17 to the end of the year. And then on February 1st, it went back to 80% stocks. So it slightly outperformed the market over that period of time and did it with half the volatility. Hey, guys, there's a better way to do it. There's a better way to do it. And we've got a better way. And we've got the historical performance data and the fee data and all this stuff to prove it. And if you're concerned about the economy and the valuation of the market, you should be. Market's never been this overvalued. It's nuts. Corporate debt's never been this high. It's nuts. You got stuff going on like a vegan burger called Beyond Meat. Go look it up. They did $80 million in sales last year. Their stock has popped 170% in the last 2 days after the IPO. And they have a total market capitalization of over $4 billion on $80 million of sales. Not exactly a Buffett value stock, that's for sure. Crazy. Zoom Technologies even more nutty. Zoom Technologies has $300 million of revenue and they've got, they just IPO'd recently. They've got market caps now at $18 billion. If you're concerned about these overvaluations and you want more of a risk managed approach, if you want to lower your fees, lower your risk and increase your returns. Remember, we're not hiding under the mattress. Increase your returns. Give us a call, 866-779-RISK. Again, 866-779-RISK. Go to the radio show website, knowyourriskradio.com. Go to bulwarkcapitalmanagement.com. Request a free booklet. Get the Roger Ibbotson white paper. Sign up for the newsletter. Call us for a consultation. If you don't want to call us, you can email us. We can correspond directly over email. But guys, look into it. We can lower your fees. We can increase your upside. And we can reduce your risk. It's what we do. It's called risk management. Anyway, hope you guys have a great weekend. Weather's getting better. Enjoy some outdoor activity. God knows I will. Taking the kids fishing this weekend. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next week. This is Know Your Risk Radio on AM 770 KTTH.
Thanks for listening to Know Your Risk Radio. Whether it's preservation of capital or an aggressive growth strategy, every investor needs a clearly defined risk profile. Schedule your free risk review at knowyourriskradio.com. Tune in next week to Know Your Risk Radio with your host, Zach Abraham, Chief Investment Officer at Bulwark Capital Management.